You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.
No, guys were not coming after me. I didn't have a I'm interested in you guys vibe. I was completely disinterested. People were like, you don't like men. No, I just was not interested. Like I was, I didn't have any interest in entertaining them and talking to them and smelling them. Like I always thought they smelled bad, you know?
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together, see what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that after 200 episodes has finally reached its goal. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali.
And today we're dyking out with Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah, that's Rosie O'Donnell.
The one, the only. Some might call her Ro if you're on speaking terms like we are now.
If you're on casual video chat terms.
Wow, wow, wow. If you're listening for the first time, this episode is going to be a little bit different because it's Rosie frickin' O'Donnell. So the whole episode is all about Ro.
Yes. We're dyking out about Ro with Ro.
Yes. And if you want any other content, you can go to our Patreon. There's actually some really maybe shocking, I don't know, content on it this week. Check it out. For as little as $5 a month, you can get access to those episodes. But this episode, forget everything you know about dyking out except for the fact that Rosie O'Donnell is the ultimate dycon, and she is on the episode today. This has been in the works since the first episode. I voiced that it was my goal one day to have Rosie O'Donnell on the podcast. And I've thought about it regularly for years since then. Before I started the podcast, I was lucky to meet Rosie very briefly at a show at UCB. I've exchanged DMs with her. She has agreed to be on Dyking Out. It's just been a matter of scheduling and timing and figuring out the right way. And then we said, hey, 200th episode, wouldn't this be great? And she pulled through and made it happen.
Rosie's YouTube page has been slowly, quietly releasing a lot of interviews. And I think they're kind of seeing what they could get away, you know, just like rights-wise. Yeah. So it was good to rewatch those as an adult. I used to watch her talk show after school. This is why she was so important for me from a young age. I was probably a little too young to fully understand what I was watching, but I knew it was important. I knew this woman was a lesbian before I knew really what a lesbian really was, or just a queer person.
Yeah, anybody who listens to this podcast knows how obsessed I am with Rosie, and just from a young age, how much she has meant to me. And before we interviewed her, I went to revisit the episode where she interviews Barbara Streisand. So for Rosie, Barbara Streisand was like the ultimate person. She grew up, you know, listening to all her records, knew every song, every word. The music was always in her house, all of that. And when Barbara came to do the Rosie O'Donnell show, it was a big fucking deal for Rosie. And I remember watching it, and I remember crying while watching it at the time, and then getting very emotional rewatching the clip and seeing that for someone. But interviewing Rosie, to me,
you're Streisand.
It's a little bit different, but for Rosie has been such an important source of inspiration in my life. And right before she brings Barbara onto the stage, she looks at the camera and she gets emotional, and she just says, "Boys and girls, dreams do come true." And then Barbara comes out. And that's what I want to say, but update it to say, folks, to be inclusive, folks.
Yeah. Folks.
Dreams do come true. And this is our interview with Rosie O'Donnell. I was thinking about it yesterday, and when you interviewed Barbara Streisand, you were 35.
That's right.
And I know Dyking Out is no Rosie O'Donnell show, but this is a pretty big personal milestone for me. So that I get to be Dyking Out with Rosie O'Donnell is a big freaking deal.
Well,
so
I'm honored to be a part of it. I'm honored to be here for your 200th episode. I think that's fantastic. You know, when I was your age, there was no such thing as a Dyking Out podcast being, you know, commercially successful. That wasn't what was happening when I was in my early 30s.
Yeah, that was a bad word back then, right?
Yeah, kind of, you know. And I remember people would ask me if it was a bad word. Like, you know, Rosie, if somebody says dyke, I go, I think the people who live within the culture that uses that word own it. You know,
right.
So it wasn't a bad word necessarily when you're hanging out with your friends, you know, hey, great big dyke, give me a beer, you know, like you would say to your friends, right? Do I look too dykey in this? Is this a total dyke outfit? You know,
like, right.
Or this, when I got my hair cut, I remember I said to some of my friends, you know, I was afraid to get it really short, you know, and I thought, well, I don't want it to look too gay. And my friend said to me, "You think it's your hair that?" I was like, "You're so right." You know, but when you're my age and you're raised in a culture where, you know, you've just been conditioned that that's not the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, I feel bad for people my age now trying to understand the explosion of queer America, or the presence of trans and non-binary and, you know, non-gendered individuals. It's pretty overwhelming to try to figure out at 60. I can't imagine people older than me how they do it, you know?
Well, my mom is turning 70 in September, and I spend a lot of time trying to explain it to her. The they, them, she's like, "But you're talking about one person." I'm like, "I am talking about one person."
right.
Yeah.
She'll get it eventually. And speaking of the word dyke, is it true that when you came out, I mean, you were out to everybody in your life, but when you officially came out on stage at Caroline's, the phrase was, "I'm a dyke."
I'm a dyke.
Mm.
That's what I read.
I believe that's what I said.
Yeah.
Got a big laugh. I go, newsflash.
Love it.
I'm a dyke. Everybody, is that a big shock to anyone? Okay, I didn't think so. Moving forward. You know,
great.
I mean, it was difficult to have sort of your life split down the middle of what the public knows and what you're living. You know, I remember when People magazine came out and it said "World's Hardest Working Single Mom." And I was like, first of all, I was with Kelly.
Right.
So I wasn't a single mom ever. Right. And to be getting like accolades and have her just kind of removed. And my publicist at the time was Lois Smith, the legendary Lois Smith, who was Marilyn Monroe's publicist as well. And she was a legendary, just a one hell of a woman, like showbiz dame, you know. And she was Meryl Streep's publicist and Robert Redford and everybody, you name it, she was. And so she, when I took the job before the show came on the air, you know, I told Warner Brothers that I was gay because I didn't want them investing millions and then saying, you know, you defrauded us. So I said, I just want you to know this, that I don't imagine that I'll come out. At the time, you know, it seemed like an impossible task.
Right.
That, you know, one person's going to change the entire culture. What are you kidding me? You know, and I remember when Ellen decided to come out, I remember thinking, well, she's going to ruin her whole career.
Yeah. And she did for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do people still think you're Lebanese?
No, but that was one of my proudest moments, where as a gay person, I wasn't going to get let another gay person stand there alone when that is, you know, my uniform too, my tattoo, right?
That's
I'm not going to, you know, there's a great Tori Amos song. Your mom shows up in a nasty dress and it's your turn now to stand where I stand. Everyone's looking at you. Take hold of my hand. And that's what I felt about that moment. I was like, you're being very brave and I'm not going to let you do it by yourself.
That's amazing.
My favorite television moment, truly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We talk about it a lot here.
Do you?
Yeah. We had Judy Gold on last summer and definitely talked about some of those moments with her and the classic Madonna holding Judy's baby.
Judy's baby. That's right.
Yeah.
Right. It's so long ago now, it's hard to believe, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. 25th anniversary, right?
Yes. It's sort of shocking. I went out to breakfast with Abby Lee Miller yesterday at Mel's Diner in Santa Monica. I met her before she went to jail, before she got cancer, on a Broadway stage. And I was like, you are too much. I'm going to play you in a Broadway musical. You get off those kids. You're so mean to them. What are you doing? She's laughing. And, you know, like I totally could play her in something. But we went out to brunch or lunch, whatever. And I must have taken 25 pictures of people with Abby Lee Miller in her wheelchair because she had spinal cancer.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And everybody was like, now she did have on a huge Abby Lee Miller T-shirt, which does draw a little bit of the attention. But she was beloved in Mel's Diner. I'm like, there's going to be a comeback for Abby Lee Miller. I can see it. I can see it.
I believe it. If you call it, it's going to happen. You've called a lot of things.
I've called a lot of things.
Yeah. From Tickle Me Elmo.
Yeah.
To Donald Trump being the worst person.
Worst person
you
living.
Were the OG hater of Donald Trump. And every time I was like, Rosie was right. She knew it.
I knew it. But how could you not know it if you grew up in New York?
Right.
You know, it was like a known thing. I mean, I remember his planes being repossessed off the runway at LaGuardia, his Trump planes and his bullshit liquor and his steaks and his fake university. It's like he's the worst kind of con man. And then he got hooked up with Mark Burnett, who is the devil incarnate, for doing what he did and allowing him the kind of resume that was completely fraudulent. You know, that he was some successful businessman, that they had a boardroom. They didn't have a boardroom. Right. Mark Burnett made a boardroom, right? This is not what people think. And now half the country is in a coma and a cult all combined. And where do we go as a nation, you know?
What helped you survive those 4 years?
You know, I think keeping myself out of the public eye, pretty much. I think maintaining my opinion and educating myself enough to be able to articulate my feelings in a concise and succinct way every day on Twitter or whatever. It was difficult. When you get into a you know, bullshit celebrity feud with a two-bit failed reality show host, it doesn't really affect your life too much. But when that man becomes the president of the United States and the biggest threat to democracy our country has ever faced. And I am his punching bag.
Yeah.
It's pretty surreal. You know, all we have to do is take these lies and make them true. George Michael. Yeah. I had an interesting thing happen to me. Not that this is about diking out, but a little bit it is. So my little girl's 8. I'm here living with her alone. My older kids are back east. She meets 4 little girls under the age of 7 in one house. She's thrilled. She's absolutely thrilled. They play together. They go, you know, on the yard in our little pool. They go, they're so deliciously. And I meet the parents and they seem very nice. And then the parents invite her to go over to their house. So I go over to their house. And this is after a couple of dates of, you know, and there I see on the wine rack 2 MAGA hats.
Well, why on the...
What do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do? First thing I did, took a picture of them when they weren't looking. They turned around, I went ka-ching. Because I had to tell people this because they were not going to believe it. First, I show the gorgeous We Are the World. Look at how the country's getting along. And then
right.
The MAGA hats come in, right? And it has been a big challenge for me personally to not disregard them because of their political beliefs. Like I have the urge, I had the urge to go like, okay, I cannot, right. Cannot what? Let my daughter have her friends. I can't what? Be civil right. to people who are quite nice. I mean, they're very kind. They're very sweet. They, you know, so finally after a few more days of hanging together with our kids, she said, how come we don't see you so much now? How come we don't? I said, the truth? I saw your MAGA hats.
Oh.
Said, and I'm like, you know, a Jew, and that's the swastika. I didn't say that we were going to be able to have this conversation. She's like, we have many friends who have many different political beliefs. I go, is this because you're Persian Jews? Is that because of the Israeli policy? Is this your illusion that Donald Trump loves Jewish people? Which, you know, frankly, he does not. So I don't know. We had a mini conversation of it. But I'm happy that I didn't just do what my instinct was, which was to go, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because how are we going to be a nation if we don't?
Right. Yeah. I moved from Queens upstate a little bit during the pandemic. And I just assume half my neighbors probably voted for him.
Right.
And it does teach you to try to see people as humans who are doing their best and they're just misinformed or hold on to bad beliefs for whatever reason. But it's so important that we can't just disregard and forget about a large swath of the country or else we'll never really be
exactly
a country.
Exactly. And
it's hard though. It's hard after
hard.
Everything that
it really is hard. It's hard to
it's hard to wrap your head around Persians voting for Trump though. I'm Persian. I'm just like it doesn't make sense.
Are you Jewish?
No.
It's the Jewish thing, I think, that
yeah.
they tied in with him with Israel, she was saying, you know. But she does not want to talk to politics. But she, you know what's funny? She has an accent like that. I said, where'd you grow up? She says, in West Hollywood. I'm like, okay. She's like, but my mother talks like that, so I kind of do. I'm like,
interesting.
I don't know that that's how accents work, but okay. You know,
yeah.
Whatever you want to do.
Well, you just moved to LA.
Yes.
Is this your first time permanently or semi-permanently living in LA, or you've done
no,
it before?
I did it for 10 years from when I first moved out there in 84 after I did Star Search, and I had my first kid, which was 95. So then I wanted him to grow up with his cousins and everything. So I moved back to New York and I took the daytime talk show job so that I could be home with him and not have to go get a nanny on the road and everything.
How's it like adjusting back to life in LA after the time you've spent in New York?
You know, New York has been very hard since the pandemic. And in the year before that, the pandemic, I had sold my house in Florida. So I didn't have that normal kind of, it's getting depressing in New York, let's fly down to Florida. You know, that's been how I've been able to stay on the East Coast for all these years. for many, many years. I had a home in Florida and it was life-saving. So for almost 2 years, having no sun and then the pandemic and my depression really got the better of me. And I knew it. And I knew I had to make a big change. And I had gotten a series on Showtime, American Gigolo, that starts shooting in January. And it will air next summer with John Barenthal and Gretchen Mol. And it's from the guy who made Ray Donovan.
Oh, okay.
So it's, you know, a really wonderful series. And I'm happy to be on that. And that shoots for like 3 months, January to March or April, here in L.A. So I have a daughter who is 8 years old and is spectrum on the spectrum. And she has a special school that she's going to here that's really for kids exactly like what she has and what she is about. You know, she's one of these quirky, like she would fit on Big Bang Theory. Right. She could be on Big Bang Theory and totally fit in with those in the quirky way that autism and all of its, you know, all of its offshoots manifests in girls is so different than how it manifests in boys.
Right. Because you had the experience with your son.
Yes, I have. My oldest son had auditory processing disorder, my youngest son, rather, which was really severe. And he couldn't understand, we couldn't understand him and he couldn't understand us. And it was really, really tragic. And so I, one day he was getting his hair cut and I said, do you want a trim or do you want a haircut like Parker? Like, and he's like, I want a haircut. I'm like, okay, honey, but what kind, like, do you want? So I got him a new haircut, short like Parker's. And 2 days later, we're driving home from school. I said, did anyone say anything about your haircut? And he starts crying and screaming and saying, I told you I want haircut and you did do it. This is not it. This is. And I was like, OK, I'm going to do everything I can so that we can figure out how to communicate with each other, honey. And I got this woman, Lois Heyman, who was had written a book, the book on auditory processing. And then we wrote the actual book about it that talked about, you know, Blake and where he was when he started and how he's doing now, which is fantastic. But I think that he, too, is on the spectrum, but they didn't diagnose him with that 21 years ago. But her, they diagnosed at 3 with autism. And every time I go back, I honestly think, this time they're going to tell me she doesn't have it. And they never do. But like, I get myself to the point where, and people, other people go, she doesn't have it. I'm like, well, maybe she doesn't. Maybe she outgrew it. No, it's a neurological disorder.
Right.
You're not really going to outgrow it.
Vast
and it's
spectrum.
So
yeah.
Right.
Everyone's
for everyone.
So different.
Exactly. So I like being here. I mean, it helps my depression. Dakota loves it. She loves having me all to herself. My older kids are adjusting. I think they understand. My 18-year-old is going to college, so she leaves in about a week. And my daughter has 2 kids and is living in Wisconsin. And Parker is about to get out of the Marines after 4 years. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, I loved your material about him wanting to get into the Marines in your special.
Yes, me like going, please, God damn it, anything. But I still have the pictures of me when in the day that he signed up and went in and I'm sitting there crying with a stranger. And I see that guy sometimes because his son went in too. Like both of us were like, what are they doing? You know, but, you know, this is what he always wanted to do in his life. And there are people who feel called to that for, you know, for reasons that us, you know, non-enlisted people don't really understand, but I'm very proud of him and I'm happy as he is that he's getting out.
Since we're talking about your kids and adopting specifically, do you have any advice for queer couples? What were the big things that you didn't anticipate that you learned along the way?
Well, I adopted all of my kids alone until Vivi, when Kelly gave birth to Vivi. And because I wanted to get on the birth certificate because I thought if anything ever happened, I was concerned that her family might feel differently, which I think that they did initially feel differently, you know, about, as Kelly's mother would say, the blood, their blood. Like, okay. But, you know, I would say this. I did it by myself because I didn't want to have to go through what you had to go through to be a gay couple. And everyone knew I was gay. Like the social worker who came to do the thing knew I was gay. And, you know, it wasn't like a surprise to them. Everyone just sort of helped people who were gay adopt, even though it was illegal.
Right. You'd had to declare that you were gay, right?
You had to declare that
or not gay,
you were not gay. Yes, exactly. That's thinking, yeah. Wait a minute, is she trying to trick me? No. Yes, you had to declare you were not gay.
Right. So you just had, social workers tend to be good people.
Yes, exactly.
Turning a blind eye. And
well, knowing that there are children that need homes and good, loving homes, and that a parent's sexual identity doesn't have anything to do with their ability to parent, as studies have shown over and over, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I remember that when we were going to adopt Rosita, there was something that you had to sign that you were not now or never had been a lesbian or something.
Oh, my God.
It was very weird. And we ended up not being able to. And then we did the ACLU lawsuit with Steve Crofton and Roger Cruteau and two nurses, HIV nurses, who adopted the kids whose orphan kids from AIDS. And some of them seroconverted, and they tried to adopt that kid and they wouldn't let them. It's to try to help change those laws because they're very antiquated and racist and homophobic and against everyone's civil liberties.
Is it still easier to adopt as a single mom than as a gay couple?
I don't know, really, because when I adopted Dakota, she knew that it was me. My other children, they didn't know that it was me. They were closed adoptions.
Oh.
And with Dakota, okay, it was an open adoption. I think now it's the same. It depends on your state. Mm-hmm. The adoption laws are state to state. And some are real scary, you know.
Florida.
Exactly.
Like that's where you were doing that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I was pursuing that. And we would take these surveys to see where the, you know, constituents were on this issue, to bring it up to the state legislature. And they said that like some absurd amount of people would rather that a child stayed in foster care than was with two gay people.
Right.
So we were fighting an uphill battle. That was for sure.
And you would talk about it on your show.
Yeah.
How was that received back then? Because I think I remember that before you had come out publicly talking about the adoption laws, if I remember correctly.
Yes,
I
mean, for sure. Yes. Never,
yeah.
For sure. I was doing that before. And we had shows on adoption because like when I adopted Blake, right, people were like, oh, how does she keep getting babies? I'm like, anyone can. I'll show you how I did it. Come on. And we'll show it on TV, you know. So.
Right.
Yeah, I remember doing a lot of shows about that and people writing me still saying, you're the reason I adopted, and or I got the baby from the lawyer on your show and he's now in college. And, you know, it's wild. It really is to be this old with this much history behind you. You know, you don't think it in your 30s, but when you get to be 60, you think it.
So much history. Let's get into your personal history.
Go.
Let's go. We have to talk about A League of Their Own.
Yes.
We recently found out you have a role on the reboot series.
Yes, I do.
We're very excited to hear that. What are we allowed to know about that?
I'm not sure, but I will tell you this. What you're not allowed to know about the L word is everything.
Oh,
they give
man,
you like a thesis of what you can and cannot say. But
yeah,
nobody has told me yet for League of Their Own. But I know I'm playing a bartender in the one sort of gay bar in the 1940s in this town in the middle of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to be really wonderful. I saw the pilot. I thought they did an amazing job. There's sort of homage to characters. Like, there's a chubby girl who talks like me from New York, you know. There's like a sex pot like Madonna. You know, they have like little nods to people. It's very sweet. Right. And imagine if they talked about the sexuality as well on League of Their Own. Like, you know, when people go to these reunions of all the women from the league, it's all lesbians, you know.
Right.
The mommy might think, the grandkids might think that's Nana's friend, you know.
Right. But,
come on, at this point. So very wisely, the people who put it together thought, imagine if we could explore that. You know, I thought it was an interesting little note. You know, people say, was your character gay on League of Their Own? And I say, yes, definitely. Yeah. And was in love with May. Didn't maybe know what to do about it, but definitely was in love with May and liked to protect her like a big sister. But, you know, when she did that scene on the bus, when I did that, where I said, oh, I was not a normal girl. And now I realize there's a lot of us. We're all OK. Penny goes, cut, Rosie, that's not like a gay thing. I go, what? She goes, what are you saying? You're like doing it like it's a gay thing. I go, well, Penny, those are the words. Yeah. I'm saying the words. What do you mean to make it a gay thing? What do you think it's about if it's not about? No, it's just that she didn't feel like she was a normal girl. And then she did because all the girls playing baseball with it. That's all.
That's it.
And that's kind of, you know, that was it. There was no subtext of any of that with anyone. The only one who got to have a sex life was Gina Davis's character. Right? Mm-hmm. Got to have a relationship. Everyone else was.
Well, it was kind of crazy that Marla Hooch, who also seemed clearly gay, that they have her link up with the guy at the nightclub. But more so than anybody, to me, Kit came off as gay, Lori Petty's character.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's just like her essence is sort of that, you know, kind of
scrappy dyke.
Well, more almost even like a non-binary kind of, you know, girl who like shaves her head. But I know she was with guys. I know this guy comedian who she was with for a long time. And, you know, I don't know. I always thought she was gay, but I don't really know her that well. You know, I mean, did the movie. It's not like we became friends or hung out or anything.
Well, speaking of queer subtext from characters you played, a lot of people don't know your character in Now and Then was originally intended to
be
a lesbian.
Cast as a lesbian, by a lesbian, me. I'm in it.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was the part of the whole thing, that she was gay, Roberta. And when they saw a cut of the film, they said people were confused with whether or not I was in love with Rita Wilson, because when she's pushed out the baby, I say I love you to her. And so they didn't know what to do because they thought it was too much like Lovers. It's like, what? So when I saw the movie, I was like, all the kind of nuancey gay things were kind of a little bit taken out, you know, but even though I'm still playing it like that, because that's how I played it the whole time.
Okay, right. That's what I always wondered. This movie means so much to me, and I know to so many other millennial girls who came of age in the 90s. It's just every friend I have growing up, like we could quote it from beginning to end. I recently learned about this and was devastated. The character was gay, like to me, like, and when I didn't know I was or what gay was, like, I knew it in my bones. And they had that singular line at the end that they added in about, like, Roberta chooses to live an alternative life, living in sin with her boyfriend. And, like, and that's it. So, yeah,
I
was wondering.
Is that what it says? Living in sin with her boyfriend?
Yeah. They add in Rita just saying, you know, like the different paths you could take. Roberta has chosen to take an alternative path. Even just the word alternative made me think, like, well, she's definitely gay. But then living in sin with her boyfriend, I was wondering what.
Everyone did a spit take. What?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it was when my show was still on. And sorry, that's so annoying. It's the leaf blowers outside. They're not on my.
That always happens with LA guests.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know why? The houses are so close to each other. I was talking on my phone on my tiny little patio near my jagged little pool. And the neighbor, when I saw her outside the next day, said, "So I heard you're going to Disney." Like, you heard it over the fence. That's what she heard.
Oh, God.
A little odd. A little odd. A little odd.
I'm just surprised because I didn't think that there were leaves to blow in LA, like on the ground. You don't see, maybe because everyone's blowing them already.
Yeah, before. They're getting blown all over the place. You never see them land. You're right. I've never seen like a big pile of leaves in LA like you do in
New
York. No.
Right.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Going back to A League of Their Own, do you have any other good Penny Marshall stories? Like, what's one of your favorite Penny Marshall moments?
Well, every day at like about 4 o'clock or 5:30, and mind you, we started before dawn usually. And, you know, it's exhausting. I mean, I know there are people who are homeless outside. I know that there are people. I'm just saying, in my universe of where I work, it's very long days, you know. So she would get tired around 4 or 5 and she'd start mumbling and nobody could really understand her. So a lot of times when she go like, who wants to go over there and then lead over, come back, you have a hot dog in your mouth and you catch a ball, anybody. And I would always go, I'll do it. How come Rosie? Always Rosie. And it's because I could understand her. Not everyone could, you know. But she would have bacon every day at 4 or 5 o'clock. She'd scream, bacon! Bacon! And craft service would run out with a plate of bacon for her. She'd eat like a whole plate of bacon almost every day. She was an obsessive hoarder of quilts, of paraphernalia, of memorabilia, of sports stuff, like incredible, like to the point where when we did the Target, I mean, the
Kmart,
thank you, not Target.
Yes.
Kmart commercials, she like rented a plane to take all the stuff that she was taking for free home to Los Angeles, where she could have bought it all for like $6,000 and saved the $35,000 on the plane, you know, but her getting free stuff was like a main existence point of her life.
Yeah, I loved that interview. You kind of roasted her for how much she took away and like got the total. It was $6,000-something
yeah,
worth.
It was.
And you were like, it's kind of hard to spend that much at Kmart.
Spend that much money at Kmart,
time.
Exactly. But she'd be like, we'd be doing the scene and she'd go, look at that Jeep over there. One of your kids big enough for that Jeep? Let's get that Jeep for one of your kids. I don't need anything from Kmart. Thanks, Penn, you know. But, you know, she struggled a lot with substance abuse, and it was sad. She got very sick with cancer and went to her brain, and then she was in a wheelchair, which I know made her very upset, and Carrie died, and they were like, you know, two sisters, same trunk, different branches. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to believe that she and Nora Ephron are gone, you know? Like these two women who had such, I was so lucky to have female directors for so many of my projects. I mean, hardly anyone gets to have as many female directors as I did, you know, and Penny and Nora are two of the best that there were ever, you know.
Penny was such a legend, and, you know, obviously I didn't know her personally, and celebrity passings normally don't affect me too much, but I remember being at work and reading the news and just crying at work about Penny Marshall. That was just one of my favorite things was that when she released her memoir, that to promote it, it's that video of Fred Armisen doing an impression of Penny Marshall promoting the memoir. And I thought it was just a comedy sketch, but Penny Marshall actually had that be the promo for her book.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I can believe that.
So funny. It's so funny.
It really was something.
Well, so you were saying that the days were long, and there's this one thing that's gone around a bunch. It is a letter that Madonna wrote to one of her friends while shooting A League of Their Own and just bemoaning the experience and how horrible it was.
I didn't hear about that. I didn't hear about it.
Oh, my gosh.
What'd she call me?
Well, that's the thing. She doesn't mention you. And I'm like, this feels like a little bit of a slight, because she says it was such a terrible time. But I know that that's where you two became friends. I'm going to read you the exact thing because I don't want to misquote this. So it's a letter that she wrote to photographer Steven Meisel. I cannot suffer any more than I have in the past month. Learning how to play baseball with a bunch of girls, yuck, in Chicago, double yuck. I have a tan. I'm dirty all day. I hardly ever wear makeup. Penny Marshall, Laverne, Gina Davis is a Barbie doll. And when God decided where the beautiful men were going to live in the world, he did not choose Chicago. I have made few friends, but they are athletes, not actresses. They have nothing on the house of extravaganza. I wish I could come to New York.
I think that sounds like her.
Yeah, I mean, it does.
We had to verify because there was no gushing over you, right?
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't mad at me. She didn't think I was annoying. So she left me in. That's all right.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And she likes comedians.
She does. Yes.
Yeah. She had Amy Schumer open for her.
Yeah.
On her tour. And she did that stand-up bit on Fallon. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
I thought, you know, listen, good for her. She's trying it out. It's not easy to do those shows, you know?
No, it takes guts to do your first open mic on Fallon.
Right. Yeah,
first open mic. Is this thing on? Hello?
Well, can we talk about your stand-up career?
Sure.
You'd mentioned on an interview with Andy Cohen on Watch What Happens Live in 2019 that you were getting ready to go do a show at Leah Delaria's The Club in Provincetown, and you said you were working on an hour to potentially do for HBO. Are you still like working on an hour? Did the pandemic affect plans for
that?
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
Because we had tour dates and little clubs. That's how I usually do it. I chunk it out. I do, just take index cards and write the topic, and then as many of the bit topics. I do it like an outline form. And then I go do like, all right, I'm going to try these three chunks tonight. And, you know, or these, and then you eventually end up with a whole new bit. But I haven't gotten to do it. And I still think I'm very concerned about COVID. I wouldn't feel comfortable performing, I don't think, live, you know. Now I'm very worried because of the kids, and I have an 8-year-old, and this seems, you know, very risky. But I would like to do it. I have a lot of material about the pandemic and about being 60, about turning 60. Like, and I was so inspired by Bo Burnham's special Inside. You know, I don't know if you saw that on Netflix, but it really,
yeah,
I thought it was a brilliant piece of work, and thought it talked about mental illness in a way that few people do. And those songs are also kitschy and gimmicky and great. You know, my kids are like, turn it off. You know, I have it on in the car. I have it on everywhere. Like, it's a musical.
It is. Yeah. Well, we hope we get to see that hour.
Yeah.
Eventually, like, when things calm down. We do comedy. We had actually just done a stand-up show in Provincetown this past weekend.
Really? Where? And
I'm still here.
What was the Velvet Lounge
or it was the Red Room at Velvet, and I'm actually going to the club tonight.
Oh, so yeah, Carolyn's in P-Town right now still. Yeah. But yeah, it was jarring. It's just a weird time, like a socially distant audience. You're trying to decipher whether or not people are laughing behind their masks.
The audience was masked.
It was strange.
It's not, you know, usually you have like sniper vision when you're doing stand-up where you could see who's smiling, who's not, who might be dangerous, who's getting too close. You know, you really are constantly taking input from the audience, and to have it be masked is very trippy.
I was just looking for crow's feet. Like, I was just looking at laugh lines. Like,
and, trying to see.
They happy?
You did bring up the L word before, and we know that there's a lot you can't say. We absolutely love Carrie. Mm.
Our favorite L-word character already.
Yes. The best thing that's happened to the L-word.
Because she's so real. Because she's an actual lesbian.
Yeah.
With real lesbian concerns.
I think just being real, and also you're an incredible actress. So the way that you play the part is so perfect. The comedic timing. I mean, that scene in the restaurant with the oysters and everything. And when you walk away from Gigi and... you're like, what is she talking about? Leave them for the adults. Like, it's so perfect. And it brings this whole other, like, it ups the game of the L word. Did you watch the original L word?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
I'm a 6-year-old lesbian.
Who do you like?
Yes, I watched it, of course.
Who are you shipping? Who are your favorite couple? How did you feel about coming in on Tibet?
I'm very happy to break up Tibet. I can tell you right now.
We are too.
Tibet has had more than enough chances. And it wasn't only that one time 18 years ago. What happened to the plumber?
That's what I said.
Come on. Yeah. She's had more than one affair on Tina.
Well, and she was cheating on Jody with Tina. It's a toxic relationship, and I want to know how the Tibet fans are treating you. Are they upset about it? Or
well, sometimes I was writing on my I don't know what it was, TikTok or something. Some of them were saying, "Leave them alone," and I was like, "What are you kidding? We're engaged. Back up! I'm going to cut a bitch. Back up!" You know, but. It was fun. We went to this Dana's bar in somewhere so far away from my house. And there were like, it was like being at the Dinosaur convention where Palm Springs, where just everywhere you look, it's just a sea of undercuts and cargo shorts and Lycra if you're brave, you know?
Yeah.
It was something else.
When the original run was happening, were you ever asked to be on it then?
The very last scene, I was going to play the detective who found the body of Jenny in the pool.
Lucy Lawless.
Lucy Lawless in the pool.
Yeah.
It was. And that's what I was supposed to do, but I was shooting something else and there was a conflict and they wouldn't let me out to do it. So I couldn't do it. But Eileen had always wanted me to be on there. And, you know, I was a huge fan of it. I mean, like everyone. I mean, I always crushed out on Alice, Leisha Hayes, Leisha.
Yeah.
Adorable. She's just, and she looks as gorgeous as she did 10 years ago. I mean, all of them have been like frozen on ice.
They haven't aged yet.
Exactly. They haven't aged a minute.
Right. When I saw Jennifer Beals age, I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She's gorgeous. She's my age, I think. She's 59 or something.
Yeah.
And she looks like that. It's crazy.
Okay. I had to know, are you improvising some of the lines? Are you bringing some? Because when you were going into the story about the jet ski place in Miami, I'm like, is this Rosie or is it just the writers who know Rosie?
It's written. It's all written.
Okay.
Now, the little thing that I did, what you mentioned about, what the hell are they talking about? Like, that was an ad lib, right? Just thrown in. That scene was a little ad lib. But the rest of it, all are written lines. And the writers, I think, did a great job, you know? Like, she has to be, Carrie's a little bit shocked that she, like, got Tina, you know? And now she's around Tina and all her gorgeous girlfriends, and she's having an identity crisis, right? Where she used to be, oh, well, I'm a lawyer, I'm a DA, I'm a, you know, whatever, I'm a, if you cannot afford one, one will be appointed for you. That's me, you know?
Yeah.
So she has to sort of face herself and all the issues that she doesn't deal with by being in this whole new group, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's pretty fascinating. I think they did a great job.
Well, we can't wait to see what happens with your character. Can you tell us, do we get to see, because the L Word is known for its sex scenes, do we get to see you and Tina be intimate at all?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. When I took the deal, I told them I didn't want to have a sex scene. They're like, really? Why? And I'm like, I have enough issues in my own life with my own body shame that I don't want to be. I can't stand the memes that are going to happen. I just like, can we just leave that alone? And they were like, sure, we don't have to do that, you know? But then Kate and all the young women were like, what are you kidding me? Go right ahead. It'll be great.
Right.
You can wear a t-shirt if you want or boxer shorts. You can do whatever you want. You know, I'm like, okay. Not for me.
Well, they are next level. They're not just regular.
You're not kidding. They're next level. And
yeah,
it's like
they're
gorgeous
intense.
Body next to gorgeous body next to what, you know? Everyone there is a model. It's like a gang of gorgeous girls. They travel in packs, you know, in the L Word.
Yeah.
Well, we think you fit in, Ro. You look great on the show.
Yeah.
And we love seeing
you
there.
Thank you. I had such fun
thrilled
doing
about
that.
It.
And
such.
I'm not on for two more episodes. So no, I'm not on next week. Then I'm on.
Oh, good. Because we host watch parties actually for Showtime at Henrietta Hudson here in New York.
Fantastic.
And
yes.
Can tell you everyone's screaming when you're on screen. And
oh, how nice.
It's just such a good reception. I mean, us included. But I won't be able to make the next two. So that's good to know that I'll be missing the ones that you're on. Yeah. Because I love being in the room watching everyone watch you.
Oh, that's so fun.
Everyone loves it.
I would show up if I was in New York.
Oh, my God.
We would love
if you ever are while the show is running.
I used to go there, Henrietta, since back in the day.
Yeah, Lisa was telling us.
Oh, that's right.
We asked Lisa if she's ever seen you there.
Yeah, I've been there. And the Cubby Hole, I used to go there a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of your old days, being a dyke in the village, what is dating like for you?
I'm so bad at it. Now, with the L Word, I have to tell you, there's a lot of your age lesbians that are very confident and very self-assured in ways that I'm like in shock. You know, so they'll write me something and like, you know, I thought you were wonderful and some thank you. You know, I write back, thank you. When can I take you out on a date? I'm like, well, I just saw your photo and it looks like when you graduate high school, ? Oh, I'm 28 or I'm 34 or I'm, you know, I'm like, okay, hold on. I am 60. Sen. But they don't see, you know, they don't see this. So I have a real issue with people's age. You know, I have a problem, like, you know, if somebody is in their 30s and I'm 60, that's not going to fly for me. I have a son who's 26, you know, it's a little too close for me. It doesn't feel like, so I don't really know how to do it. I mean, people ask me, I get nervous. I don't know, you know, it's been a while since I've gone on a date.
Yeah. Is it friends setting you up or have you ever tried the apps?
You know, TikTok is the latest lesbian dating match.
It is. Because
Match.com or Her or whatever the ones are now, you can watch like a good 40 minutes of these people making entertainment and see like, okay, that might be a warning here. Oh, wait, that's kind of icky. You get to see a lot more than just a photo.
Yeah, TikTok, you don't stop.
Exactly. TikTok,
we hope you never do. I know. We love it.
I know.
You're so prolific on TikTok. We've got to
put us to shame.
What's the process? What inspires you to make a TikTok?
It depends. Like if something big happens, like I saw that big fight at the beach and these two people, this husband.
Oh, yeah. I watched
fighting. This. Yeah. Yeah. And they had this, he had this table that came and he put it together like it was like some sort of Boy Scout thing with knots. And, and then he put his chargers for his phones and this and that. And the wife came back and like picked up the phone and threw it at him. It was like a full on fight. Yeah. And when they left, when I got home, I'm like, I have to do that one. I just have to tell the story of what happened, you know? So that's sometimes just life. But I do go on it and I like to sort of duet people or sing a song with them or, you know, do something. If someone does something funny, to do something back. I think it's a very creative app, you know, and there are people who are really, really good at it. And I look to them and I'm very inspired at how creative they can be on this, what was formerly a 15-second app. Now you can have or 3 minutes, but that's, you know, it's a lot.
You're always on the cutting edge with social media, new media. Do these apps just save the name Rosie for you then?
You know,
like, are they just keeping that waiting for you?
That happened with Twitter when the guy from Twitter came over to my house and said was going to teach me Twitter. The Jack Dorsey came over to my house to teach me Twitter.
Wow.
And
I
was like, that's what I was like, wow, you are the one guy I see on TV. And he said, we saved the name Rosie for you. I said, oh, okay. So I didn't know that it meant anything, but then it also saved that on Instagram. It saves it on. So now I just have that name where people a lot write me and go, can I buy that name from you? I'm like, no,
there's more than we don't Rosie. Want. Why would anyone?
Yeah, that's mine.
To another Rosie. Yeah.
What's the worst date that you've been on?
Totally no. I totally know. It had to be 94, 95. A woman had bought the right to go on a dinner date with me at an event that I was at.
Oh.
There was a place called Muse on Melrose. And it was like a trendy place of the day. And that's where we were going. And she paid a lot of money to go. I get there and she's sitting there and it's obvious that she's already drunk, right? She's very drunk. Mm. And she's trying to get more drinks for her and trying to get me drinks. And I decided I'm not drinking. Thank you anyway. I'm going to just go. She's like, well, wait. I go, why don't you get a cab? Why don't you just leave your keys here and get a cab? She's like, I'm fine to drive. I don't really know the woman. You know, like I'm like, well, I would, if I were you, I would leave your car here and get a cab. And it was no Ubers then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We go to La Cienega. We're on Melrose. We hit a main street going up. And she gets out of her car, which was a Mercedes convertible, and comes to my car behind her and says, are you sure you don't want to go out for another drink? And I said, no. She runs back to her car, comes back and asks me if I have a knife. I said, what? She said, I locked my keys in the car. Now, I had a knife on my this big that you like, you know, do your nails with. I don't even.
Right.
I don't think it's a real knife, even though it's a Swiss Army, but it's thin as hell. You know,
mm-hmm.
She took it. I thought she was going to jiggle the lock. Right.
Yeah.
She cuts into her leather top of her Mercedes with this little tiny fucking thing. The blade breaks off and cuts her skin right as a cop car turns and makes a left and stops right next to her. And I'm parked behind her.
No.
I'm like, oh, dear God. The cop comes over and he's like, aren't you Rosie O'Donnell? I said, yes. I said, can I explain to you what happened, sir? This was a charity event. I don't know her. She's obviously drunk. I asked for her keys. She wouldn't take them. I don't know where she lives. I don't know anything about her. I have to go home. She's like, he's like, well, if you take her to a hotel and we leave her car in like one of those donut places, like with the big Randy's donut on it. So we left her car there and I drove her to the Four Seasons because that's where I always stayed. And I dropped her off there. I said, get a room. So she's getting a room. Next day, I'm on the set of Exit to Eden. And it's an emergency phone call from this girl. She wanted to know if we had sex and where her car was.
Mm.
The real bad thing is 3 weeks later, I walked in to do a voiceover. And she was the producer of the.
Oh
my God.
Wow.
Awkward.
That's an epic bad day.
Yeah. So many levels. Was this like a one-off voiceover? One-off. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't like one-off. A series.
I wasn't going to have to keep seeing her now.
Yeah. Oh, your voice work is so good though. I listened to the audiobook of why am I blanking on the memoir
find me.
I had just said it. Yeah. And all the voices you do made me wonder like, why haven't you, where are all the like Pixar characters?
Yeah.
Well, Tarzan, Turk.
I did Turk.
Oh,
I did,
yeah.
They don't really pay you a lot of money to do those. It's like an honor.
Oh, really?
Work. Yes. It's like an honor to work for Disney and, you know,
I get, yeah.
They're honored when they make hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know why that's how it is. But, you know, you don't really make a lot of money. But I would love to do some. I don't know why I don't.
Is there a type of role? Because you've been really kicking it up with the acting, it seems, in the past few years. And is there a kind of role or character that you're just dying to play that you haven't?
Well, someone like Geraldine Page in The Pope of Greenwich Village. Have you ever seen that?
No, but I'm going to
Chesterfield cigarette. And she's taking out the pieces like this. My son, Walter, was as tough as a bar of iron. And he didn't get that from his father. I got a brother. He's an old fashioned parish priest. Gray hair and all. He'll do a spot on the 6 o'clock news. Have this whole city in tears. Now you want to get out of my house, copper? That's exactly what she did in that movie.
So like a grittier character.
Like a mom.
Not the Queen of Nice.
No, exactly. But, you know, listen, Smilf was a chance to play that kind of
I love you in Smilf.
I love
by
that
the way.
Too. Such
your Southie
show.
Accent is perfect. Just that character.
Yeah.
My girlfriend and I love and speak in your character's accent to each other. Yeah, again, vernacular. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that show.
What was the name of your character in Beautiful Girls?
Can you believe I don't remember?
Yeah, I'm blanking. It was like a Gina, Tina, like something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Gina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved that character,
That was
too.
A great
one. Had a little grit, that one.
To do that take all in one take, you know?
Yeah, walking.
Right.
If you notice, there's no cutting. He just would do more big takes. It was
it's awesome.
Really fun to do that movie. Although when the movie poster came out, they sent it to my office, Miramax, and I looked at it and I was like, "Oh my God, was Courtney Cox in this movie? I never saw Courtney Cox in this film." It was me. They had cut out so much.
I thought that too.
Yeah, that I looked like Courtney Cox in the promos. And yeah. I was on the phone on mute when my agent was talking to Harvey, and he said, she should thank me. She's never looked better.
Oh, my God.
Always a classy man. What can I say? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. May he rot in hell.
Yeah.
Speaking of roles, what do you think about the news of Beanie Feldstein being cast for Funny Girl for the Broadway revival?
Well, you know, I was working with Michael Mayer for a while on and had talked to him about doing the role of Rose, the mother of Fanny, who has a song in the Broadway show. But it was when Adina was doing it. And then I got the series and I moved out to L.A., so I'm not available to do it. But I think Beanie is very, very talented. I think she's really good. I think it's an interesting choice. It's not, you know, a typical choice by any means. And, you know, let's hope she gets out there and makes it her own. I mean, Streisand will be 80 this year, you know, mm-hmm. and it's never been revived.
Right.
So maybe it's time. And I wish them all the luck in the world.
And are you going to be coming back to New York for that?
Oh, when
Broadway opens up, that's going to be, yeah.
When Broadway opens,
you're all over the place.
I don't know. I worry with this Delta variant, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but I do. You know, the Spanish Civil War, the Spanish flu that in the 1819 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The second wave was what killed millions of people. We haven't had our second wave yet. So it's very scary.
Switching gears, what is something about you that people are always surprised to learn once they get to know you?
I think the depression. Like when people, if you know anyone with depression.
Hi.
Yeah. It's, you know, people are surprised. Like sometimes they say, like if they see me with my normal face in the store, not like smiling, are you okay? I'm okay. It's my normal face. We're used to seeing Rosie O'Donnell like this, but this is my normal face. I'm not upset. I'm not mad. You know, if you have depression, I think people are surprised at how, quote unquote, heavy it can get.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yep.
This woman I dated, who was a police officer, Elizabeth Rooney, her name is, she said, you know, that she would tell people, listen, it's not what you think. You know, it's not what you think. You know, not that it's worse or it's just different than she would imagine, you know.
Right.
Like the things weigh on me, you know.
Well, especially with being a comedian and having had your show, that I imagine there are a lot of expectations on you. And I think on comedians in general, that people expect them to be on all the time and always jokey and trying to make people laugh when really it's usually the opposite.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I remember though, when I was your age and I would be at a club and the middle act or the opener, we would all go out in the day to see a movie usually to pass the time. And sometimes I would have like openers who were so excited that they're like, did you see we're in the paper? Yeah. We're like, there's an ad for the Governor's Cafe. It's like that big, you know, and they're telling everyone, hey, we're performing down at Vinny's Yuck Yuck Palace. If you want to come, we can get you some comps. And, you know, like,
right.
I remember how annoying that used to be to me.
Yeah. Right, right. When someone asks what you do and
you're
trying to avoid saying comedian.
You say you're an accountant. I learned that from TikTok.
Much better.
I know that's for sex workers, but I think comedians should adopt that too. I'm an accountant. No further questions, usually.
How old were you when you realized that you were gay?
You know, it's so hard because my mom died at 10. So that was like a nuclear bomb in the middle of, you know, a life. And everything kind of gets mixed up like at that kind of point. But I remember her telling me about, you know, menstruation and getting your period and what I would have to do if that when that happened. You know, and then she went to the hospital and then she died. So I didn't know if it was real, if it was true. Like, I thought it was maybe something that she did, but she didn't mean to scare me, but she scared me. And so right around that time when she died, I had my first crush on Lori Schachner's older sister, Lisa. And when you went into Lori Schachner's house, her mother would take both of your cheeks in her hands and kiss you. And it was so unbelievable. And Lisa did it too. She would kiss you on both cheeks. And I remember thinking, oh my God, Lisa Schachner. That was it, you know? So I would say pretty young, you know? Yeah. I would say like around 10. Fifth grade.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I knew. You know, and I was so much better at sports than my brothers and everybody, all, you know, their coaches used to say, can we trade them in for her? You know, but this was before girls could play sports.
Well, you were also prom queen and everything. And
class
I
class president, very, right? Was it? Weren't you?
Yeah.
And the class clown.
Like, were guys coming after you?
Guys? No, no, no.
Yeah. No?
No. Guys were not coming after me. I didn't have a I'm interested in you guys vibe. I was completely disinterested. People were like, you don't like men. No, I just was not interested. Like I was, I didn't have any interest in entertaining them and talking to them and smelling them. Like I always thought they smelled bad, you know? No interest sort of. No interest from early on. So no, none of them were. I had a crush on Mary Rose my senior year of high school. And she was dating Augie Tofano. And it was a lot of drama. But, you know, no, I never really had guys kind of wanting to date me.
And how long was it until you had, like, your first experience with another woman?
I would say I went to college and I fell in love with a girl named Chris Salucci, who wore a white hooded sweatshirt with no zipper. And I had never seen a hoodie like that with no zipper. And red sweatpants and white Reebok low tops. And I remember she wore her blonde hair in a braid down her back. And for years, if I would see anyone with a braid, I would like have to catch my breath, you know, for a moment. So we were never sexual, but we were madly in love. And we used to tickle each other's backs in college in the bed together and sleep in a twin bed. But that was it. Nobody was really brave enough to do anything else.
That seems that sounds gayer than sex to me.
Exactly. Right. Probably, right?
Yeah.
Gently tugging at her braid.
Yes. Tender queer moments.
Right. And then I had a relationship when I was like, my first real relationship, I would say I was, I think, 22. Like I had, you know, had sex starting at like 21.
Thanks for telling us.
I was trying to remember now. I could make up a whole story because nobody could fact check it.
Going back to Madonna, quick question. So Madonna is working on her movie that she's writing with Diablo Cody, her biopic. Who do you think should play Madonna?
The young girl from Ozark.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, she's a great actress. Great actress.
Is there any chance that Lourdes would do it?
I don't think so.
No. That'd be too messy, right?
No, and it's not her thing, I think, you know. Yeah. She's going to do something. I think artistically she'll do something on her own.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a beautiful girl, wonderful girl.
I know. Just seeing the picture, she looks so much like
she
like
definitely does.
Yeah. And then at the last concert, I was lucky enough to see Madonna in October of 2019. Yeah. And with the Frozen song and Lourdes with that screen coming.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah. That was just really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I grew up a huge, huge Madonna fan. Like my walls covered, plastered with posters, pictures, everything of Madonna. A League of Their Own was my favorite movie. That's where I learned about you from. And then I knew you were best friends with her, and then your show, and I started watching this, and everything that you liked, all the Broadway stuff, I'm like, finally, somebody who, like, gets me and who I can relate to. And there's also something about her, I don't know what it is, yeah, but she makes me feel less weird. And watching your show every day, you were just the coolest person. I mean, you still are, and anybody who listens to me talk on this podcast knows that I think you're the coolest person.
No, thank you so much.
It meant so much to me, and like, my mom loves you. My grandmother, who's no longer with us, loved you. And just going to watch your show with my grandmother. And I remember when you came out, and I imagine you got this a lot, my grandma was like, I mean, it's fine, but why all the stuff with Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it wasn't only
got,
your grandma
that a lot.
Who thought that.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. And but I remember thinking, because that was around the time that I realized that I was gay and had my first girlfriend. And when she said that, I was like, oh, she's fine with Rosie being gay. It's just she felt deceived by the Tom Cruise thing.
Exactly.
And that's great. So now I know that my grandma's going to be okay with me, and she was my best friend, and that just like meant the world to me. So thank you for all of that. And you know, just wouldn't be doing this today if it wasn't for you. I remember I met you. Of course, I remember this. I met you briefly after the show you did at UCB, that female gaze show.
Oh, right.
And at the end of the show, my wife and I were sitting in the front. I had my Rosie O'Donnell show koosh ball pencil. And you looked at me and you said, come here. And you said, I gotta hug the lesbians. And that moment afterwards, I like started sobbing.
Oh, honey.
And I called my mom. You know, it was like 11 o'clock at night in New York, crying. Gave my mom a heart attack. She's like, what's wrong? Where are you? Is Cecilia with you? What's happening? And I'm like, I'm Rosie O'Donnell.
Well, you know what happened to me the other day? I was out to dinner with my son and his fiance, and this guy comes over from a table just across from us and says, I'm good friends with your friend Sheila. I'm like, oh my God, how do you know her? Blah, blah, blah. And then I see Kathy Bates get up from her seat and start walking over to me. And she said, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I said, what, what, what? She said,
wow.
Your role, and I know this much is true. She said, I auditioned for that role, and you did it better than I would have. And I thought to myself, is this really happening? Am I having a stroke? You know, like, am I smelling burnt toast and hallucinating this whole thing? And I said to my son, who was there with me, I'm like, don't ever forget that, Blakey, because that's something that I will probably talk myself out of, that it happened, you know?
Right.
Because I couldn't believe it. I started getting teared up, and my son's like, you gonna cry? I'm like, kind of. Yes. That's like the best actress working, telling me that she likes my stuff.
Do you feel like you get overlooked or underrated as an actor? Because you nail every role, everything you're in, I feel like.
Well, thank you.
You bring so much to it.
You know, I think for a long time when I did acting and then I did my talk show, and then people see you locked in that position. So it took all this time for that to kind of dissipate. And people go, oh, are you going to do a show again? I'm like, I really not, because I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing, which is work on myself as an actress and hopefully continue to get these wonderful roles that will give me an opportunity to one day have that Geraldine Page movie, you know, hopefully. Right. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I know that I've had a career that most people couldn't even dream of, you know, and even when I was dreaming it up, I didn't think of the success and the level that I have had it, you know. I mean, it surpassed my dreams. And sometimes it's hard to sort of take it all in, you know. Like, it's hard also not to feel like, wow, I'm almost done. You know, you're 60, you know, you have 20 more years in you. You're lucky if you get to 80 healthy, you know. And I'm hoping I do because I have an 8-year-old.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
And we're hoping you do, too, for more selfish reasons.
Yes.
Well, I'll take them. I'll take
we're
them all.
Such fans.
Yes. Yes.
It's so nice.
Just can't thank you enough for
preparing for this. We've been, like, nerding out on Rosie content.
Going through old clips. Yeah. Just crying. Talking to our moms.
That's so nice.
Oh, yeah. My mom says hi.
Yes, our mom say hi. That's very important that we let you know.
Truly.
That.
Like, you were like my after school mom. I was a latchkey kid. I would come home after school and watch your show. I grew up with immigrant parents who were just constantly working, going to night classes after work, and just learned so much from you. Like, cultural blind spots have like really lessened just from watching your show. I learned about Broadway, a lot of pop culture I would have never been exposed to, which I really think like steered me in the direction that I've like, or the place I found myself in now. Like, I just truly learned so much from you.
Wow.
And this is such an honor. I never thought I'd get to talk to you. I'm not going to cry.
Wow. Listen, I'm proud of you two, so young and doing this. And
thank you.
You know, having the foresight to call it what it is, dyking out. There you go.
So young, Rosie, when you were my age, you were hosting the Rosie O'Donnell show. Get out of here.
Well, from this point where I sit, you look like babies.
Thank you. No, you really are fulfilling the prophecy of this podcast.
Oh, that's true.
We started it out. Yeah, we started it out the first episode. We say we want to create a community for dykes and dyke adjacent folks. We want to bring different perspectives, people from all different walks of life, backgrounds. But really, our raison d'être is to have Rosie O'Donnell one day come on the podcast.
Wow.
Because, again, just such an icon, dicon.
Really
done so much for our community and have made this all possible. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you, Rosie, for diking out with us today.
Both of you are more than welcome. Carry on. And anytime you want me to come on, just call me up.
Oh, my God.
And if you need a date to see Funny Girl on Broadway when you're back in New York, I'm available.
Yeah, she is one of those millennials.
There you go. They're bold. I'm telling you, they are bold.
My wife won't mind. My wife won't mind.
All right, good. There we go. Now we're in a thruple. We're in a thruple. Look what happened.
Look at that.
That's how easy it is. It's a gateway drug.
These are the times we're living in. Thank you so much,
thank
Rosie.
You. Have
enjoy the rest
day.
Of your day.
Yeah.
Take care.
Soon.
Love you.
Bye. Love you back. Bye.
Bye. Okay. So that was it. That was the biggest interaction that I've had with Rosie yet. I have a feeling it's not going to be the last.
Dreams come true.
Dreams come true. And Rosie makes dreams come true for a lot of people. That was just such a great thing. So usually here is where we would answer a listener question. But Melody, we listen to each other every week. So my listener question for you is, what was your favorite part of talking to Rosie?
Okay. Excellent question, Carolyn. I would have to say, getting that confirmation from her that Roberta in Now and Then was a dyke. Like, we all knew it. You know, I'm obsessed. This was a major, major movie for me. And
yeah,
she obviously didn't have like the biggest part. Like, it played with time. Christina Ricci played her younger self for majority of the movie, but like, it definitely flashed back to her a lot. And as a kid, I was like, that is familiar. And just to like have that confirmation from her that like stuff was cut out of the movie, of her saying like I love you to her friend and just being like more affectionate. And
yeah,
to talk to Rosie O'Donnell about Now and Then, I know it's not even, it's a blip on her career, but so much, a TikTok of hers can change someone's life. And like, she does so much, big and
right,
small. And that was just something that meant so much to me. I
yeah,
never thought I'd talk to her in life. And the fact that I talked to her about a movie that meant so much to me was huge.
Right.
So I'd have to say that. I mean, there's so much to choose from. This was a dream, Carolyn. Do you have a favorite moment?
There were a lot. I mean, at the end when she jokes about us being in a thruple, me, Cecilia, and Rosie, you know, that's a sound clip that's going to be my new ringtone.
Yeah.
And there's so much I loved about this and so many little tidbits of information, you know, things like the Penny Marshall impression, so much fun. But one of my favorite things is we asked her, and this isn't in the episode, so if you're listening to this, you did not hear it. We asked her to record a message for us to play at our L Word watch parties that we do every Friday at Henrietta Hudson. And she agreed and recorded into the Zoom this video message for everybody. Mm-hmm. And
Mid-interview.
And she's such a pro that it's like somebody flips a switch and all of a sudden it's showtime for Rosie.
Yeah.
And she just lands this perfect greeting. It's funny. It's charming. She doesn't hesitate. She doesn't stumble, stutter, nothing. And it's this great short clip. And we'll probably post this. We'll definitely post it on our Patreon so that everybody can see. And then the people at Henrietta's saw it. Yeah. I loved it so much. And just seeing her switch that mode, it's just always really cool when you see a professional like that be like, oh, okay, now I'm doing this thing.
Yeah.
Action. And seeing that. Yeah. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, that's my answer now too. And I think close second for us is bringing up TikTok. I got to say to her, literally, I go, TikTok, you don't stop. And she goes, exactly. Something about that I can't stop thinking about. And it's so funny to me. Exactly. Without missing a beat.
We should put a clip of that on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. I'll get started on that.
Love it. All right. Well, we hope you all enjoyed that. And again, for more content, we talk a little bit more about the behind the scenes on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/dykingout. You can follow us on social media at Dyking Out everywhere, at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok. You can follow Rosie. Rosie didn't plug her social media. We'll plug it right here. At Rosie on all platforms.
Everywhere.
You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
And thank you to all you cutie patooties for listening.
See you next Tuesday. TikTok, you don't stop.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.